Today is May the 4th, so may the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you as well, always.
Thank you for joining me on this debate on The Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 8. This is, of course, a limited series podcast. We're only doing 8 episodes in honor of this being Episode 8 of the Star Wars saga. And today is the big one. This is the one where we have had to hold back many times. I've been editing our other episodes, and there's, I think in every single episode, there's a moment of like, we don't want to get too far into Luke because we're going to talk about Luke. Well, now is the time for us to talk about Luke. Okay, so I want to set the stage a little bit. I want to set the stage. You are a Luke Skywalker guy. Yes?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Tell us briefly, what draws you to Luke Skywalker from the original trilogy? What draws you to Luke Skywalker?
So what draws me to Luke Skywalker is you have a guy who started as a basically nothing farm boy who takes a step into something bigger and more important than he himself is, learns some cool secrets of his family and some traditions and religions that they were a part of, learns that he's capable of using the Force, and then by the end of his story arc in the original trilogy, becomes sort of this beacon of hope and optimism and, I guess, ultimate good to overcome evil temptations, the temptations of the dark side.
Yeah, to overcome the temptations of the dark side. So I'm gonna take this a step further with you. Like, that's all wonderful, right? We love the orphan who can become a Jedi Master. We love that in fantasy series. His cool secrets, learns about his family, hope, optimism, overcoming temptation and evil in the dark side. We love those themes. I want to take it like even further. Like, what is it about Luke as a character, as a story, that really resonates with you the most?
I mean, what resonates with me the most is his, like, the importance of, like, his friends and family at the center of everything, his desire to do the right thing in every scenario. And I think that's the crux of it. I grew up playing Star Wars games too, and in some Star Wars games, like, you kind of have paths that you can choose, like light side, dark side, and like, being a Luke guy, I could never bring myself to, like, even test the dark side stuff. It sounds stupid, but like, I just wanted to be the full pure Luke Skywalker all the way through.
Yes, I really
is that deep enough?
I love what you're saying here, and I was pretty likewise. If you could choose, I kind of always chose the light side. That's fantastic. So okay, so let me just see if I'm understanding you. You love Luke's sort of his journey of becoming a nobody into Grand Jedi Master that represents hope, optimism, and goodness. And the things that resonate with you most, the three things that kind of resonate with you most are how important, how his family and friends are to him, his desire to do the right in every scenario, and it's like just the pureness of choosing the light. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things that you love about Luke Skywalker.
I would say so, yeah.
According to The Last Jedi, every word you just said is wrong. You see what I did there?
You baited me. You baited me into saying things that I feel are true, and then you're telling me that everything I said is not true. I see what you did there. And
I even used Luke's words.
You're using Luke's words against me. Yeah.
I know. Well, clever. I'm the dark side here. So I'm sorry to have set you up like that, but that is what The Last Jedi does to us. Because I think you represent the vast majority of Star Wars fans in your feelings about Luke Skywalker and the Jedis in general. Now, of course, there's always going to be people who are like, no, if I could choose the dark side, I'm going to choose the dark side. Cool, right? That's fine. We respect that. But I think the vast majority of people, one of the reasons why we love Star Wars is we do love to see quote unquote, the everyman journey of nobody into somebody of great importance who can do something great, right? Who does choose the right thing, who has family and friends, who is pure and full of light. Like, that story resonates with the vast majority of Star Wars fans, I believe. But what The Last Jedi movie does is it takes all of those things and it completely throws them. Let's begin at the very first scene where we see Luke Skywalker. We've got Rey. She walks up, she offers the lightsaber. And in a way, this movie is saying, we are now offering to you, Luke Skywalker, everything we hold dear about the Force, about the Jedi, about you and your story and your journey. We are now offering this up to you. And what does he do? He takes this beloved, powerful, amazing lightsaber that has seen so much of the galaxy and tosses it over his shoulder like it's nothing. Like it's nothing. Now, in the theater, I remember having a mixed reaction in the moment. Two feelings at the same time. One, that was funny. Okay? It's funny. Mm-hmm. We laugh.
Played
but two,
laugh.
It's like, it's confusing. It's like,
yeah.
Huh? What? What's going on here? And from that moment on, we are all very confused because the Luke Skywalker that we see in The Last Jedi is not the Luke Skywalker that we saw in the original trilogy, nor is it the Luke Skywalker that all of us built up in our head canon for the 30 or 40 years in between movies. Okay. Maybe some of that's on us. Maybe some of that's on the filmmakers. I don't know. But from that moment on, we were told everything you thought you knew about Luke Skywalker is wrong.
I will concede that it was a very jarring thing to see. I think the emotional response is everything that you knew about Luke is wrong, and that from there on, it's an unrecognizable Luke that certainly none of us were expecting, which was deliberate. I don't think Rian Johnson, it's very clear that Rian Johnson used Luke's arc to subvert expectations, knowing probably, as a Star Wars fan himself, probably knew what people were expecting out of Luke's appearance and was like, well, I got a different story to tell here. Right. And I think like when I left the movie, and I'm not to skip ahead, but like when the movie ended and the credits rolled, I did not know how I felt about, I felt positive about the movie. I knew going into the sequel trilogy that the legacy characters were side characters, but it didn't mean that I wanted the legacy of those characters to be changed or
literally tossed over the shoulder. Like it was
or tossed over the shoulder. Yeah. but I knew that they weren't the main characters anymore. So like overall, my feelings about the movie itself were still positive. But I felt challenged about what I thought about Luke. And so that was after the first viewing. After that, I had to like relook at what, like on repeated viewings, I had to look at like what I expected Luke to be here. I had to take even further steps back and look at what was the Luke that was set up to be in this movie. Mm. And in the first episode we recorded here, we kind of talked about like the state of where Star Wars is at when this movie came out and like what was set up from The Force Awakens to be continued on here. And now I don't know if it's even written down or whether there's been an interview where JJ says what he would have done with Luke. We don't know, but we know that they made the choice to go with three different creatives and Rian Johnson saw an opportunity to tell a slightly different tale. Now, to be clear, if I were given creative reins, and not saying I should have been, not saying I'm a better writer than Rian Johnson or JJ Abrams or anybody, I definitely probably would have done a much more fan-pleasing depiction of Luke. I probably would have made this movie all about Luke and less about Rey and Ben. And I would have been the wrong guy to make this movie basically, but it definitely wasn't the Luke that I would have written up had I been given the pen. However, I do think given the circumstances, given the setup, it sets up a very interesting tale that I think actually continues and digs deeper on some of the things that the original trilogy brought. I think Rey's response to him throwing that thing over the over the shoulder was like, I feel like Rey is the audience there, right? Like she makes it clear that she knows who Luke is. She's heard the stories. In our case, we've seen the movies. We've seen what he's done. She's probably even heard more than we know, right? Like we went 40 years without hearing anything about Luke Skywalker. So like maybe he did a lot more in that 40 year period of time that she's heard like some different heroics throughout the galaxy. And ultimately, I feel like that's what we feel the most is like we've gone 40 years without seeing Luke Skywalker. We went through a whole movie without seeing him. Like this better be a payoff. And plus he's all over the marketing materials. It's like Luke's going to play a huge role in this movie. So he takes the lightsaber, he throws it over his shoulder. And just like Rey, she's like, what the heck? And we're all feeling that too. Like, because he's handed the lightsaber at the end of Force Awakens, and you're like, oh, this is important. This is going to be a big moment. He's coming back into the action. But no, there's more to it there. And just like Rey, like the audience has to figure out why. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big question here. We have a guy, and I guess it's worth mentioning that, like, I think JJ's original, the way they actually shot it at the end or was planning to shoot it, was Luke was going to be like hovering with like rocks floating around him when she appeared on the island, when she came to the island and found him, like not shut off from the Force. And Rian Johnson actually directed the last scene of Force Awakens to fit linearly to this movie.
Oh, interesting. Did not know that.
To those who, I guess, two questions. Number one, how willing are we to be challenged on how we view Luke and his legacy? And I believe this movie resolves all of that. Like, I don't think this movie actually commits any errors. We'll get into that. But two, if Luke had access to the Force, think of all the stuff that went down in Episode 7 that would be pretty disappointing that he didn't try to go intervene or try to stop. Especially like in Empire Strikes Back, where like he senses his family and friends are in danger and he's like, see you, Yoda. I'm going to fly across the galaxy to stop this from happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we know that he was Ben Solo's master. Ben Solo kills Han Solo. Like, where's Luke? And so right there, it's interesting that within minutes of Rey appearing on the island, there's some clues that he has no idea that any of that happened, which to me was actually a relief. Like, mm-hmm. Chewie comes barging in the door and he's like, well, where's Han? And I'm thinking, like, how does he not know, right? And we still don't know yet. And so Rey's arc with Luke is her discovering along with us why he's not, hasn't been involved. It also seems weird that he'd be off like hiding on a planet somewhere while the galaxy is going to crap. And like, what is the answer to that? Like, what did JJ have in mind? And we'll never know. And we don't have to know. So I thought Rian Johnson took those questions and gave a pretty interesting answer to them. And so, yes. And I said in previous episodes, like, does the lightsaber over the shoulder, like, could they have done it maybe more reverently? And maybe fans are like, you know, less upset about the way that was handled. I think so, probably. But like you said, like, I think part of it was played for laughs. Like, we're just like, wasn't expecting that. Like,
yeah, it was very unexpected.
Very unexpected. But I think the journey that they take us on doesn't betray the Luke that we learned to love the way that it felt like it did for half of the movie.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that one. I want to challenge you on that because what happens immediately after the lightsaber is thrown? And let me set this up a little bit more. In the original trilogy, we've watched Luke Skywalker go from annoying farm boy to Jedi Master. And we're expecting Jedi Master here. But what does he do immediately after this? Is he starts doing farm boy chores again. He's milking the cows. He's got blue milk. He's going fishing. His starship X-Wing is packed away. Like, he is essentially reverted back to exactly where we saw him in Episode 4. And let's take this. The movie drives this point even further when it's like, okay, I'm going to go onto the Millennium Falcon. He sneaks onto the Millennium Falcon. R2-D2 wakes up. And Luke says a couple different things. Well, one of the things he says is, sacred language, sacred island, watch the language. Right, which, okay, so he still has some respect for the island and the place and the power of it, but R2-D2 has to pull out. You know, Luke says, "There's nothing that can change my mind." So then R2-D2 pulls out Princess Leia's original message that when we all saw that in Episode 4 of A New Hope, we realized nobody farm boy is now wrapped up in something bigger than himself, and there's a pretty princess who needs help, damsel in distress, and nobody farm boy thinks that he can do something about it, right? And we engage in that. That's when Luke's story really starts to turn, is he sees that message and he starts to take a lot of different actions from that in both A New Hope and in The Last Jedi. So his whole story of the original trilogy wiped out. He essentially reverts back to where he was before, no Force, doing farm boy chores, thinking only of himself.
I would say he's not thinking only for himself. And I feel like the movie does a pretty good job of explaining the reason why, but I feel like the shots of him doing like the farm boy stuff, fishing, milking, showing the X-Wing, to me was just an effective show not tell type storytelling. Like, how has he lived out here? How is he eating? How is he, you know, staying alive in the middle of the galaxy with no one around? And just showing that, like, he's still super resourceful and he's still maintaining, like, the fact that he's even like helping maintain this island and like being a part of it shows that he's like not all the way out. But I do think there's George Lucas's words is always that like Star Wars rhymes. And I feel like Luke's is distinct because, number one, I feel like the biggest gut punch that this depiction of Luke is that we missed 40 years of prime Luke. Like Luke, yeah. I don't think he becomes a master at the end of Return of the Jedi. He didn't even become a Jedi until the end of Return of the Jedi. And I feel like, I mean, someone can judge if you're a Star Wars fan, you're hearing this and you have a challenge on that, like let us know in some comments or send us an email. But my interpretation is that he becomes a Jedi and then he's still going to have to train somehow to become a master and establish the Jedi school, whatever. And we only know that he successfully did that because in episode 7, we're told that Kylo Ren killed everybody and that's gone. So in the previous movie, everything that we're stoked to hopefully see of Luke, we're told is gone and we don't even get Luke in that movie, right? And so then we finally get to see Luke and we get to see where he's at. Well, this is a man who's everything he's built over the last 40 years was destroyed. The apprentice that he took on from the people that he loves the most in the galaxy didn't pan out. And he feels, number one, a feeling of extreme failure on the Jedi front and then on the family front. And he looks at the legacy of the Jedi and sees that the legacy of the Jedi was a big failure and that because of the Jedi, Darth Sidious, Emperor Palpatine came into power. And so what he's viewing, it may seem selfish, like, yes, he might be emotional and taking himself off out of the picture, but I would say that his view of the galaxy and the Jedi's role in it, he's actually trying to do the galaxy a favor by nipping that at the bud. Like, I've seen, like, I knew that Anakin destroyed the first Jedi Order. It led to the destruction of the second Jedi Order because I raised Kylo Ren and Kylo Ren destroyed it all. I'm just going to end the cycle and do the galaxy a favor and just come here and die, which, you know, there would have been a lot easier ways to die. So that's the other thing is like, there's no way he gave up all the way, right? I feel like he got there with the intention, but there was still something there. Maybe he just needed a spark, which is another theme of the movie. Or a ray to bring back some of the things. And I guess, sorry, I'm talking for a long time. I'll give you a chance to respond to that, but I do have one more thing to say to there. I was just going to say his Star Wars rhyme, sorry, circling back, I went on a huge tangent there. Star Wars rhymes with itself. So you have Obi-Wan Kenobi, who became a hermit in the desert, completely detached from any of the conflict that was going on. And it took a message from Princess Leia and the droid to pull him back into the battle. And who knew that years later, that same message would bring Luke back in. But then you have Master Yoda, who was off, became a hermit in hiding, and came back into the battle in a sense just to train Luke, but didn't actually really come back in any meaningful way other than to train Luke. And so there is like a pattern of like these old Jedi that after a big failure have found themselves just kind of off living a monk's life, observing the Jedi traditions by themselves in solitude and letting the world just happen around them.
That does certainly rhyme. And I could see how Luke he might be able to notice that pattern there. I just think the conclusion of, you know, Luke has this belief, okay, I trained Kylo Ren. I trained Ben Solo and he became Kylo Ren. It was a Jedi who trained Darth Vader and it was the Jedi who were so blinded by the dark that they couldn't see Darth Sidious rising. Like this is, that's all wrapped up in the second lesson he gives Rey. The first lesson he also gives Rey is like, there's light and there's dark, there's tension, there's balance, and it's outside of the institution which we call the Jedi. It's outside of the Jedi Order, the light side and the dark side, right? The Force is the Force and not so much of the narrow strictures that the various religions or sects or traditions will put on it. So mm-hmm. Those are the kind of the two lessons that he gives Rey, but his overarching theme is, I will teach you the ways of the Force and why the Jedi must end. And what you're saying there is he has come to the conclusion that because the Jedi feel like they have special access to the Force, And because they train people who will choose to use the Force in ways that are evil and hurt others, that makes the Jedi bad and they need to be removed. Like, I don't know.
I think it's more of a commentary on probably like the balance of the Force. Like, if he's teaching on the balance of the Force in lesson one, and this is where we're getting into some like really philosophical Jedi nerdy.
Yeah.
Philosophy of the Force 101.
Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
Yeah. First lesson, he's talking about the balance of the Force, which he goes more into depth. I guess that explanation and the juxtaposition of light and dark through Rey's experience kind of does more, I guess, digs deeper into sort of what Yoda says in Empire Strikes Back. So it's a better understanding, or I guess a clear understanding of the way the Force works. Snoke talks about it later, about light coming to meet the dark. And I think what he realized, and again, what Luke thinks was right to remove the Jedi or to end the Jedi, ultimately he comes to the conclusion in this movie that he was wrong, right? We'll get to that.
We'll get there. But we'll get there. But Rey pushes him on both lessons too. Like, Rey doesn't accept lesson number one. She goes straight to the dark side. And in lesson number two, she also is like, the galaxy may need a legend. You brought Darth Vader back. Like, they're still getting, like, even Rey is resisting these lessons as he's teaching.
Right. Yeah, totally. Totally. Which also is kind of a rhyme with the thing, like every Padawan challenges their master, right? On yes. pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. But anyway, mm-hmm. I think his view was raising up a strong power of light is inevitably going to create a strong power of darkness to meet it. And I think in his mind is like, well, if I just snuff it out, which again, he's wrong here, if I just end it and I don't start or continue the Jedi traditions and the failures that have happened before, then these type of mistakes aren't going to happen again.
Okay. All right. I think I see what you're saying now. It's back to this idea of balance. And mm-hmm. yeah, Snoke brought it up of, and Luke, darkness rises, light to meet it, light rises, dark to meet it. And so what Luke is saying is, okay, the Force exists regardless of what we do about it. Mm-hmm. And if no one teaches, if the light doesn't rise up, then the darkness will not also rise up. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
He assumes the vice versa is also true, that darkness will not simply rise up and that light will not rise up to meet it. Like, okay, that might be so. But even so, like, Luke has already seen that darkness has risen. He sees Snoke in Ben. He sees that he's already turned. He senses it. He sees it in his training. He has some level of Force vision in that night in the hovel. And so it's like, darkness is already there, Luke. Like, if your plan is to cut yourself off from the Force, that dark doesn't rise, like, you're too late, buddy. You got to deal with the problem you have. Well, and I guess, let me rebuttal myself here. This is the lesson that Yoda teaches him. Like, you're always looking at the horizon. We'll get to the horizon. Never mm-hmm. at the here and now. Never at the need in front of your nose. And so Luke's maybe is like, I'm not seeing the need in front of my nose. I'm looking off to the horizon. Remove myself from the Force so that darkness will never, ever rise again. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's his goal, right? Like, and I think part of shutting himself off from the Force, because like he could still use the Force and detach himself from the equation, but then he's going to sense everything. He's going to feel all of it. And I think this was his way of being like, you know what? Sure, like darkness is going to rise, but light is going to rise. And I'll just let that happen. Like, I'm just going to take myself out of the equation. I'm not going to carry the burden of raising up another generation of Jedi that could bring another great generation of evil with it, like, to meet it. Like, I'm just going to try to ride off into the sunset just as is. And I also feel like this is a parallel theme to our Canto Bight episode where Finn has to make the decision to join the cause, and he has a different individual that's kind of tempting him, like, don't join, like, whether you're dark or light, like, it doesn't matter. They're basically the same, so just, like, stay out of it. I feel like Luke came to that conclusion on his own, but he thinks he's learning from the failure of previous generations and his own failure, but ultimately, like Rey's kind of pointing out, and Yoda, obviously, like in his final lesson, and yeah, we'll get to Yoda, but ultimately he learns that regardless of the pain and stuff that he went through, like the baggage that we missed, we see in some flashbacks, but we miss all of that. But ultimately, like, cutting himself off is not what is good for the galaxy, ultimately.
Yeah, so he does come to that conclusion. And it's really interesting because when Rey and Kylo are having one of their Force connections, this is when I think the moment we see Luke reconnect with the Force. He goes up to the altar at night. He touches the altar. The water fountain with the dark and the white stones kind of has a cool shimmering effect to it, which is very visually symbolic of, okay, the master Luke is back in touch, and he telepathically connects with Leia all the way across. She's in a coma. She just saved herself from flying out in space, and they say each other's names, so we know that there's a connection there. I also would theorize, too, he's healing Leia from all the way across the galaxy, and he does look exhausted. He looks like it is physical exertion, so he's realizing, okay, maybe I do need to start connecting back in with the Force, and his very first thing to do is, I'm going to connect with Leia. A lot of things happen with Rey and Kylo, and then Luke and Rey start to fight, and then we see, yeah, Luke really is back with the Force. She's using her bow. He grabs some antenna thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she upgrades to the lightsaber, and he upgrades to, like, Force pillow on the stairs. Okay, right? Like, so, okay, Luke is back with the Force, but it's interesting because we have a second opportunity, mm-hmm. where Rey again hands him the lightsaber. She holds it out to him and says, here's your second. She doesn't say this, but that motion is, are you going to come back? We can turn Kylo Ren. There's still good in him. I just sensed it. We can turn Kylo. This is how we win. This is how we save the resistance. Are you going to come back? And he refuses, right? So mm-hmm. he might be beginning to see, okay, maybe I was wrong to cut myself off from the Force, but yet he still refuses the call to adventure. He refuses his call to come back to the Jedi. And we'll get to the tree in just a second. I want you to rebuttal to this, but let's just stop right there. That he is refusing the call.
He, in my opinion, is not refusing the call. In fact, he accepted the call.
How is he not?
Rey. No, okay, wait, hey.
He accepted the call. Go ahead.
He accepted the call to train Rey, right?
Okay. Well, he was going to say, I'll show you the ways of the Force and why the Jedi must end. So a little bit of a bias in how he's going to train her.
Okay. And I guess with the lightsaber, I want to say he is not rejecting the call. He's rejecting the lightsaber. And the lesson that he learns in Return of the Jedi, it's funny because we know that, like, outside of the movies, there are different stories that were told of Luke and does a bunch of cool things that may or may not be relevant anymore because when the Disney take over, some of those stories don't exist anymore. But then we see some of them in The Mandalorian. Like, we see some cool stuff, and I'm all for that.
Yeah, 100%.
I want to see peak Luke, and I want to see him with the green lightsaber. I want to see him doing all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just take the movies, and the lesson that he learned in Return of the Jedi was actually him throwing the lightsaber away and rejecting striking anyone down for the sake of the light side and saying, no, I'm a Jedi. I'm not going to strike you down. Okay. And that is like the peak Luke moment of the original trilogy, because he doesn't even take down Darth Vader. He doesn't take down Emperor Palpatine. That resolves itself. And then that's the motion that brought Darth Vader back from the light side. Right? Or from the dark side to the light
his
side.
His submission.
His submission.
Not to the dark side, but his submission to peace, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Non-conflict.
Yes. Which is the true Jedi way. That's what they're trying to teach in the prequels. And the Jedi erroneously join the war and become basically soldiers in a cause that they were never supposed to be a part of. Anyways, Luke throws the lightsaber away, and it's like the ultimate Jedi moment. And I think in our heads, we're like, no, Luke beat Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine. It's like, yes, but it wasn't like it wasn't Yoda coming into Count Dooku doing backflips and laser cool stuff. It was a very different kind of triumph. And so I think the first time when he throws the lightsaber away the very first time, it's kind of like you don't know what you're talking about, like, there's a much bigger thing going on here with the Force and all that, that you're just not even aware of. Like, the fact that you're offering me this shows me that you don't know what I've been through and what's going on here. This time, I feel like it's a very deliberate, like, no thanks. Like, yes, I'm back. Obviously, he's using the Force again. He's not saying this, right? But, like, he's trying to stop Rey from getting with Kylo Ren. So he's invested again. But when she's offering the saber, I think in his mind, it's like, I don't need that to be involved. And if we fast forward a second, just to when he's force projecting himself across the galaxy, he's projecting the blue lightsaber that's destroyed. He's not projecting the green lightsaber, and he doesn't even fight with it. He draws it. He doesn't fight with it.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
But what I'm saying is rejecting the lightsaber does not mean he's rejecting to join back in the conflict.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What you're saying is he's not necessarily, he's not rejecting, I need to come back and join the conflict, but he is rejecting the aggressive means by which Rey is offering him to come back.
And that she assumes he needs to. Yeah.
Okay. That she assumes that she needs to. And what we might look, if we could peer into his brain and think and see what he's thinking, it's like, I have found a wiser way for me to help the resistance. And it is not through a lightsaber, and it is not through my physical, it is not through the return of the Jedi. Oh, man, I'm so full of puns tonight.
Oh, dang.
Am I hearing what you're saying?
Yeah, well, and on top of that, just to punch this home, in the flashbacks, what is he doing? What ultimately caused the end of him and Ben Solo's relationship was him drawing the stupid lightsaber like he had thrown away in Return of the Jedi. The lesson he had learned at the end of Return of the Jedi, there again plaguing him just for a half a second, a temptation, and that was the cause of this whole thing. And so for me, it's like, it's entirely about choosing a different way than just drawing the laser sword.
Okay, interesting. So at the end of episode 6, he realizes, I need to put my sword to the side and not confront them. And you're saying he forgot that lesson or ignored that lesson or had a moment of instinct where that lesson was not in sway when he actually did pull his green lightsaber out as a means to violently end what he saw as rising darkness in Ben Solo. And that was his chief moment of failure.
This podcast is sponsored by Bragboard. Quick question. Have you ever been asked, what did you accomplish this quarter? And your mind just goes blank? Not because you didn't do anything, but because the work is scattered across Slack, docs, meetings, your memory, or worse, your managers. That used to happen to me all the time. Bragboard is a simple tool that captures your work as it happens, and it turns it into clear, credible proof you can actually use in reviews or one-on-ones. So when the question comes up, you are ready, not scrambling. If that sounds familiar, check out Bragboard today. Visit bragboard.work to start your 42-day free trial. That's bragboard.work.
Let's, we're kind of going chronologically, and I really like this because the next big scene with Luke is the tree and the return of another Jedi, Great Master Yoda. Now, there's a lot of things going on in this scene, and there's a few things I want to point out. So Luke still seems bent on his primary motivation of the Jedi must end. He's said that multiple times. He's given us different ways of that, right? He's rejecting the lightsaber, and now he is going to go burn the tree down. We've seen Luke burn things before, right? In honor, but now he seems like he's over the edge. This is the last straw. I'm going to go burn the tree down. Everything's over. Everything's done. But he still has hesitation. Right. Mm-hmm. Even Yoda shows up and he's like, what you doing? And Luke still says, it's time for it to end. It's time for it to be done. Yeah. Right. I've been a pyro this whole time. He's going to burn it down, but he hesitates. And it's Yoda who has to do the final lightning. He calls the lightning down. Tree starts. Even in the fire, Luke still feels some regret. He's still uncertain, and he tries to run in to go get the texts. Like, that's what he's worried about, but, you know, big explosion, it pushes him out. He can't go in there. Which, by the way, a Jedi controlling flames around them, that would be a really cool scene. But let's put a pin in that one. Anyway, he's not, the tree is burning. Luke is still hesitant. He's still divided. He doesn't go get the texts, but he still feels like the Jedi must end. He tells Yoda that. Yoda seems to agree. Yes, time it is. But then he's like, time for you to look beyond these old books, right? So in some ways, Yoda is echoing the same words that Kylo Ren is saying, right? Like, it's time for the past to die. Kill it if you have to. Yoda literally just killed the past, like this ancient tree in the text. So Yoda is seemingly by deed and action saying, by deed and word saying, it's time for the Jedi to be over, but he still has lessons for Luke. Like, Luke, you haven't done what I told you to do. You're still looking at the horizon. You're not looking at the here and now, et cetera, et cetera. Like, and then we have the great thesis of the movie, right? Like, the greatest teacher failure is, we are what they grow beyond. That is the burden, that is the true burden of all masters, right? That is the thesis of the movie. So I have a lot of mixed feelings about this. I love seeing Yoda come back. Like, who does not love Yoda, man? Yoda is amazing. Even baby Yoda is amazing, but that's not neither here nor there. We love that Luke still seems rather torn, but both of them are still bent on the Jedi must end. It's time for us to evolve beyond this thing that we called the Jedi and these ancient religions. And as a viewer of this, when we watched Star Wars, like, that's what I wanted. I wanted to see the return of the Jedi. And we never saw that on film. We got the First Republic and the Jedi Order and all that kind of stuff. That's right. Like Jedi in their biggest peak prime. Like, that was the thing that we most wanted to see in the 40 years. And you're going to bring up, yeah, we didn't get to see Luke in the 40 years. Yeah. But again, this movie is saying, like, hey, you know what? The Jedi, they're not all that special. It's time to move on from the idea of Jedi, which just saying the word itself is awesome. You know? Jedi. It's so cool. And this movie, again, is saying the two epitomes, the two greatest personifications of the Jedi are both in agreement. Nah, it's time to move on. And that just rubs me the wrong way. It's just terrible. You're shaking your head. So let's hear what you have to say.
Funny. Everything you just said was wrong.
Well played, sir. Well played.
No. I think so. Okay. Okay. I what's funny is it harkens back to Obi-Wan Kenobi in Return of the Jedi when he's like, well, this is no, everything I said was true from a certain point of view. You know, like
that's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah. It's interesting the way that, like, and I don't blame anyone for taking the interpretation that you took, because it's there, it's real. There's not enough, like, content in the movie to really invalidate it. All I can do is give you my interpretation of it, which is very different, but I share, like, all the same feelings about the Jedi and wanting them to persist, to continue, like, all of that I share. But because I interpret it differently, I actually, like, find a lot of meaning and enjoy these scenes. And it's just, it's crazy how different of an experience we can have just by receiving it differently. And
from a different point of view. So change my point of view. Okay. Convert me to the light.
I don't know if I can change your point of view, but I can tell you mine. And that's, like, so Luke, let's pick this up from the steps where Luke is on his cool force couch and he rejects Rey's offer to join, and then she bolts off. And to me, it's like, Luke, we already know, is an emotional man. He's an emotional guy. That hasn't changed. He's probably even more emotional because he's old and grizzled. And so he's seeing, like, great, Rey's leaving her Jedi training and heading across the galaxy to who knows what. She's not listening to my training. I've seen this movie before. I'm going to go burn this mother down, because the whole reason I didn't want to get involved was to not have this happen. I failed Ben. He's a bad guy. Rey's going to go unready to Ben Solo. Now she's going to be like, for all he knows, just as bad. I have to end this. What was I thinking coming back? And so he's heading up the steps of the flames. You already gave us the play-by-play really well. Wants to burn it down. Yoda shows up. The lesson that I think, so Yoda finishes burning the temple with the lightning. And so Luke takes that initially as validation, which I think is wrong. I think Yoda corrects him. I don't think Yoda agrees with him. He says, so it's true. It is time for the Jedi to end. Because that was what he was wrestling with the whole time. Like, I actually can't burn this. Like, feels like there's something in him that knew that it wasn't. And Yoda says, time it is. And if we put a period there, then we think, oh yeah, Yoda's agreeing. But we know that Yoda doesn't talk like that.
Yep.
He says, time it is for you to, I can't remember the exact quote, to, like, stop looking beyond the or
time it is for you to look beyond a pile of old books.
Yeah. And so to me, the lesson Yoda's teaching is that whether the temple's gone or the texts are gone, like the Jedi teachings can live on. And Yoda knows that the texts are with Rey. So like yes. Luke doesn't know that.
And we don't know that.
And we don't know that. But the lesson is that like this is a physical temple, but that burning this temple doesn't mean the Jedi are gone. Burning the text does not mean the Jedi are gone or that they can't exist or they can't continue on.
Okay. Mind blown. Sorry to interrupt, but the lesson that Yoda is teaching here is almost, it rhymes the first lesson that Luke is trying to teach Rey, which is the Force is bigger than you. It's bigger than what you think it is, right? It's not just this square that maybe the Jedi say it is. It's not just this square that the Sith say it is. Like, the Force is bigger than what you thought it is. Like, Luke, you still have not learned even the first lesson you tried to teach Rey.
Yeah. And by the way, I love Luke being back in the apprentice shoes in these scenes.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's so good. It's like, didn't skip a beat from Empire Strikes Back. Like,
young Skywalker.
So, and ultimately, like, he's necessarily teaching that like failure itself is the biggest lesson and better than anything else you can teach them, but it often is the greatest teacher just because it can be your own failure. It could be the failure of other people that you can learn from, but you grow and you learn from it and you don't just like live with it and give up. You learn from it and you continue. And that's ultimately kind of the aha moment where I feel like Luke was like, okay, I'm back. Basically.
Yes. Okay. I love what you're saying. And exactly that last thing where Yoda's teaching, like, yeah, pass on what you have learned, strength mastery, yes, but also weakness, folly, and failure. Or weakness, folly, and failure are the other side too. And it's like, well, that also was the second lesson that Luke was trying to teach Rey, which was the Jedi were in their hubris and in their pride, they were blinded to the dark side of the Force, right? Mm-hmm. Because they were focused solely on strength and mastery and wisdom and discipline, but they did not pass on weakness, folly, and failure. They were blinded to those things, right? So Yoda is still trying to teach Luke again the second lesson of yes, pass on the good and the bad. The balance has to go together.
Yeah, I love Yoda. Yoda shows up big for me in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And there's that sweet moment of them just watching the temple burn together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. But just take a little moment and just stare into the fire. Fantastic. Now, something happens after Yoda and Luke stare at the tree. Something happens, or rather you might say something does not happen in this film for about 45 minutes. Do you know what it is after this scene for 45 minutes? Something that doesn't happen? Okay, I'm making you guess my brain.
Okay.
Here's what doesn't happen.
Okay.
Luke Skywalker is not on screen for 45 minutes.
That was going to be my guess, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So in, you know, storytelling, three-act plays, fantastic. I think this moment is sort of all the decisions have been made and everybody is teed up and now ready to do their third act arcs. And it's so interesting that for 45 minutes, Luke Skywalker is not on screen at all. So the movie is telling you, okay, Luke rejected the lightsaber. We talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
The temple's been burned down. Luke is gone. Luke is out. The resistance is on their own. And we get the epitome of the throne room and the break, the Holdo maneuver, the thing splitting in half, the story, Finn and Rey, like all these story arcs coming together. The next moment that we see Luke after 45 minutes is when the resistance is like, oh shoot, people have heard our signal and they're not coming. And all of our speeders are down. We have nothing. All of our fighters are gone. There is no way out of this cave. No one is coming to help us. The Death Star, like it's already broken in. The Death Star's tech has broken down like there is zero hope left for the resistance. They're at the worst possible moment. And that is the culmination of 45 minutes when who walks into the scene? Luke Skywalker.
Luke freaking Skywalker.
Luke freaking Skywalker. So will you allow me a Lord of the Rings tangent for a minute?
Please, by all means.
So Tolkien coined a term called eucatastrophe, or it's the opposite of a catastrophe. So this is like the good and unexpected twist or turn of events when everything is at its most bleak, most desperate, no hope type of a moment. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you've seen The Lord of the Rings, the reason that the ride of the Rohirrim on the Minas Tirith, the reason that hits so hard is because it's a eucatastrophe, right? It's been so long, we almost forget that Rohan is coming. Minas Tirith is completely desperate, right? And again, it hits so hard when Frodo is actually able to destroy the ring. Like, he claims it for himself, and it's like, oh, great. There is no more hope anymore. Frodo claims the ring. Aragorn's about to die. Everything, like, you have these moments where complete and utter despair, but untwisted turn of something unexpected, but not completely unlooked for. That's the key. So a lot of people confuse this with like Deus Ex Machina, where like God's hand intervenes, but it's like there has to be a setup to it, right? Mm-hmm. But the setup is can be so subtle or so far away or so small that you almost forget about it.
Like an open thread. Exactly.
And you might miss it, okay? So Luke showing up right there, I will call it a eucatastrophic moment. This is eucatastrophe at its key, right? In fact, like everything is bleak, everything is dire. Luke shows up and he's got this conversation with Leia. Nobody is ever really gone. Does Leia
see through?
Yes. I love that wink. It's great. Like, what do you say to C-3PO? You say nothing, because if you say anything, you know, C-3PO is going to tell you the odds of something, right? He's just going to blah, 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 blah. You wink. Like, he knows what he's doing with C-3PO. He hands the quote-unquote dice to Leia. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. And he walks out in front of the First Resistance with his laser sword, right? Every gun I want, trained on that man. Boom, 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 boom. The laser's coming off. Like, watching this stuff, like, in the movie, I remember I was on the edge of my seat. My mouth was open, edge of my seat. I was eating all of this up. He walks out there like the legend he is. This is Luke friggin' Skywalker, laser sword in front of the First Resistance. Lasers, visually, this is epic. Every gun on him. Kylo Ren is in his craziest, you know, frenzy. Hux is actually looking like the more competent person here, which he never has in the entire movie. Kylo Ren goes down. They have a confrontation. They never touch. Never touch. Luke's laser lightsaber skills, way different than Yoda's. Yoda versus Count Dooku. We get some spins, but it's a very different style. They never, ever touch. No physical evidence that he's there. Every word you just said was wrong to Kylo Ren. Like, the resistance is done. The war is over. You are the last Jedi. Every word you just said is wrong. So, here's my problem, Matt. I can't complain about this. I have complaints about the mineral planet scene. Now, we'll get to the horizons and what happens after.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But this scene, this projection of him on the mineral planet, it is just, it's amazing. See you around, kid. If you strike me down in anger, I will always be with you, just like your father. Which is a rhyme to what Obi-Wan said to Darth Vader. It's a rhyme to Darth Vader to Luke. Like, Anakin is now always with Luke. We see the Force Ghost at the end of episode 6. Like, all of this from Luke walking into the resistance to see you around, kid. It's cinema gold. I have no complaints.
Well, let me put some exclamation marks on that.
Okay.
I love that you brought in the eucatastrophe. I think it absolutely is that. I think this is it almost like, to me, this scene validates the journey that we had to go on with Luke at the beginning, almost from a contrast standpoint. Like, okay, this is the state he was in. And then because he was there for those reasons that we already covered, now he can come back, no longer conflicted with his legacy. Again, there's a theme of like resolve in this movie where you thought one way and now you see resolve. That's a big theme. And so now he's come back into the picture, no longer burdened by the legacy that he thought he had betrayed or that he had failed, and is able to do arguably the most Jedi thing of any Jedi that we've ever seen. Because not only is he coming into battle to help the resistance, where the prequel Jedi failed by coming with their laser swords and fighting along clone troopers. He is coming as a projection, an intervention, a distraction, and he's able to intervene in the conflict without any violence.
Mm-hmm. He is a stalling tactic. Yeah.
As a stalling tactic, and he's able to obviously project some emotion out of Kylo Ren and sort of answer those questions, but also express that, like, kind of, we talked about the conversation with Yoda, like, the Jedi are going to live on. Like, I'm actually not the last Jedi. And we assume that Rey is the Jedi that he's talking about. I'm secretly hoping that there are other Jedi that survived somewhere out. Schoolyard debate. We hope that the other Jedi are out there. Yeah. That Kylo Ren didn't kill every single one of them, that Luke was the last Jedi. But anyway.
Well, at least we know that he's not the last and that Rey is there and that there's still possibility for more.
Yes.
At least we know that.
Yeah. At least we know that. And so in doing this, he's doing a new force power that was set up earlier in the movie. Ben Solo kind of set the stakes for it too. Like, oh, this, like, just doing this would kill you, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. once we find out that there's this, then he subverts expectations again. So like in the Star Wars DNA, Ben Solo tries to stick his lightsaber through and you're like, oh, no way. And then you know exactly what he's doing. It goes to that shot of him hovering in Octo on the island. It's like, dude, this is the greatest Jedi of all time. And it's like all the feelings of like Luke Skywalker just like come flooding back. Like, yes, this is Master Luke. Yeah, those are, I guess that's the added commentary that I wanted to leave there.
And you're bringing tears to my eyes when you that scene in Octo and he's floating there and the music and Kylo Ren is just absolutely stunned. And it's just like, oh, yeah, he is the greatest. He is the GOAT. This is Luke Skywalker, Jedi Master, legend, story, everything. This is that. That's fantastic. Like, it's peak, it's amazing, and it's fantastic. And then almost immediately, it's torn out from underneath you. Because what happens? We go back to Luke. You know, see you around, kid. Resistance is gone. They're all getting on the Millennium Falcon, Rey pauses. We go back to Luke. We get the beautiful, he's watching the sun set. We get the same music that we got 40 years ago.
But the suns are flipped. Did you notice that? The suns are
rotated. I did not notice that. Okay. They're rotated.
He's on the opposite side of the galaxy.
On another inversion. Okay. So he's on the opposite side of the galaxy. He has moved beyond where he was. Beautiful scene. Even my wife, who is not a Star Wars person, by any stretch of the imagination, when I was watching this, taking some notes, and she's like, hey, that's like that one scene when he was a kid. I was like, yeah, right? Like, so like, even the non-Star Wars people get this. They get the moment, and then he disappears. He joins the Pantheon, a very few, very elite group of Jedi who disappear at their deaths, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda. Luke Skywalker disappears in his death. As Rey says it, she senses the presence. What does she say? It's not sadness or pain, but peace and purpose. Leia feels it too. So Luke Skywalker had to die at some point. Fine. Great. But really, like, him putting his projection across the galaxy to interact with Leia, wink at C-3PO, and have this non-fight with Kylo Ren. Really? That's so physically exhausting that the GOAT, Luke Skywalker, is now dead? Like, it exerted so much exertion that he's gone? What? Tell me. Convince me.
Okay. Look, I'm going to repeat this again because, number one, this is the scene that I'm most conflicted about. And it's actually not the way that it's done, but more selfishly that, like, I did not feel ready for him to be dead in this movie.
None of us did. No.
And
none of us did.
And I have some consolation for that. I'm not saying that it's the right thing or that I wish it wasn't different, but my consolation is that, first let me just address his death. The way I read this is that he did something that Kylo Ren believed would kill you if you did it. And so we knew the stakes were high, and we knew that this power took a ton of force or energy or exertion. We knew that it was high risk. And he does it. He does all those things while projecting. But when he's done, he's physically exhausted, but he doesn't like die in exhaustion. He doesn't like look at, he looks up and he's like all sweating, and he doesn't die in that moment. In fact, it shows when it goes back to him, he's meditating in peace.
Yeah. Yeah. He's back up on the altar. Yep.
It implies that there's some form of recovery there, and that wasn't probably the thing that killed him. And when Obi-Wan dies, it took a saber to go at him, and then he just like his cloak drops. When Yoda dies, he just like disappears. Because to me, it's like his job was done. Like it was just time. And when Rey says that he didn't die in agony and pain, he died in peace and resolve. To me, that was just Luke's moment to be like, okay, I've done it. I intervened. I did my thing. The rebellion's going to live on. And now I can be one with the Force. And that's when he disappears. And I don't know if I feel ready for that there. Like I would have liked another movie with Luke being back in the fray. But in that moment, I don't believe personally that it was the exertion of the projection that killed him. I think it just shows how powerful this guy was. Like he did that. It should have killed him. It didn't. But in the end, he did his part and now he's gone.
I guess I could buy sure that sure while it was physically exhausting, he didn't die from the draining of having to do that projection. Because he was peaceful and resolved, as you said, very collected and calm back on the altar, considering the sunset. So not completely splayed out and exhausted, whatever. But like you say, you were not ready for Luke to die. I was not ready for Luke to die. The audience is not ready for Luke to die. And it's really, is this really the epitome of his journey? Is to do a stalling action for like 10 people who resist the First Order to be able to get on the Millennium Falcon? Like, I don't know. Just something lame about that.
You could reduce it to that, right? But it's more than that. Like, if those 10 people are dead, the First Order takes over, right? And the First Order reigns for however long, you know. If we believe the Force, then eventually light would come up and maybe someone would come to counter them. But, like, it was imperative that he save that so that a bigger thing could live on. That they could rally the troops in Episode 9 and get every ship ever designed in Star Wars in the galaxy to show up on screen. He had to do it at that moment, in that period of time. And like my conflict with it is that selfishly, I would have liked to see him do more. But like the way that they built up his arc and the lesson that he learned in this movie and the way that he did and went about it without drawing a lightsaber, like to me was actually a really good send-off. I just selfishly would have wanted more Luke, just because I want more Luke in everything.
Yeah.
And that's where my... The saving grace is that after I collected my thoughts on this movie, after a few viewings, I knew that he was going to come back as a Force ghost. And one thing that we didn't really get to enjoy with like Yoda or Anakin when they died, like when Vader dies and he comes back as a Force ghost, like that's almost like a tease. It's like, well, what would he teach Luke? Like, what does that relationship look like now? Mm-hmm. But then it's over. We don't get any of that. And so this one, Luke dies in the middle chapter, which opens the door for us being able to enjoy him in the next phase of his Force life as a Force ghost. And we didn't get that luxury with anybody else. And maybe in other things, he'll come up as a Force ghost as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no one's ever really truly gone.
No one's ever truly gone.
So, okay. I can see the I can feel the conflict within you. Yeah. Luke decided it was his time. He would be able to come back as Force Ghost and maybe intervene in some other ways. And he did go out, as you say, in the most Luke Skywalker way possible. If peak Luke Skywalker is the Emperor's throne room, I will throw my lightsaber away. I'm a Jedi like my father before me. I will not fight you. If that is peak Jedi Skywalker, then the way that he dies on Octu is the way that he would have to do. But I think the biggest complaint, and like we say, this is like a schoolyard debate. Mm-hmm. The biggest complaint we have is we just want more Luke Skywalker. We just want more. And so while it is fitting that he dies in that way, mm-hmm. it just, we're not ready for it. Like you say, we're not ready.
It almost feels like if we could have rewritten the sequel trilogy, like we get Luke for 7 and 8 and then he dies this way in 9. Right?
Yes.
Like,
Yep, exactly. Like that would have been the chief moment in 9 where we suddenly realize, okay, Han, Luke, Leia, their legacy has passed. We're now moving on. Like it's just so premature, right? Han dies in 7, Luke dies in 8, Leia dies in 9. Like it's just, you know, well, what should the order have been then? Well, I don't know. Han in 7, Leia in 8, Luke in 9? Like, is that the order of legacy passings that should have happened? Maybe. But it's not. And we have to just deal with the unsettledness of how we feel about that.
Yeah. And the consolation prize is we get Force Ghost Luke. One of my critiques of the whole sequel trilogy is that, like, there wasn't enough color in the lightsabers, like, or variety. We get that at the very end of episode 9 with Rey with her own like yellow thing. It's like, well, what happened to Luke's green saber? Like, can we do something fun with that in some capacity? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think I don't know what the decision was around like Luke dying in the middle chapter other than to bring him back as a Force ghost. But I feel like if they were going to do it and they obviously did it, like this was a great way to do it is I guess my final take on it, because I love how it was done.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Matt, this has been 8 episodes of you and I debating The Last Jedi in one final debate. You've represented the light side. You defended the film. I represent the dark side, critiquing the film as well as I could. And I almost said this to you the other day, but I stopped myself because I wanted to save it for now. I will say, I think that your defense of this film is helping me view it in a new light, in a lot of different ways. Now, I say that and I'm like, okay, the last time, like I've reviewed the Luke Skywalker storyline today before we recorded, and I still saw some other scenes, and there's still like a visceral, like gut, like sickness in my gut sometimes on some of the scenes. But I will say, you have helped me appreciate things that on the surface, when my reaction was just, this is stupid, this is dumb, I hate this, da 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 da. On further reflection, it's like, okay, maybe there is something more to this movie than what I knew before. Various layers of looking at it, different interpretations of things. I'm not going to go forward and say that it's my most favorite Star Wars movie ever. I think it definitely has some really iconic and powerful moments and visuals and story arcs and things. But I will say, if I am not so much, I will say, I don't think I'm on the dark side anymore towards this movie. I wouldn't say I'm fully on the light side, but maybe I'm kind of on the gray side. I'm a gray Jedi towards this movie now. Towards this movie now. So,
I will take that. I will take that. That pleases me. That pleases me exceedingly. The one thing I will say that's been fun about this debate is, like, I guess just to bring this full circle, the schoolyard debate is the DNA of Star Wars. And I understand that, like, there were adults who saw the first Star Wars in theaters that, like, didn't actually have the experience that you and I had with Star Wars because it was happening to them in real time and they weren't children debating story arcs. Now, that there may have been debates there, but the internet wasn't, you know, up in full force. Twitter didn't exist. YouTube essays, long form essays didn't exist. Yeah. Like, we live in a world where, like, everything is scrutinized and discussed ad nauseum, and every thought and idea is challenged. And in the case of Star Wars fandom, it gets toxic extremely fast. And the irony there is that Star Wars itself is some of the most uplifting content, like put to screen. And so the fact that something so great and so what should be unifying can cause so much division is very perplexing. But I do think, like, the healthy debate is just as fun as the movies themselves. Like, I have as much fun watching the movies as I do discussing them, or discussing them as I do watching the movies. And that's just how I grew up. And that's what I probably missed the most about this internet age, is that you either have to love something or think that it sucks entirely, and you can't be one or the other. Otherwise, just there's this viciousness that exists. But I really think that, like, it's okay to have difference of opinions on things, and not all projects are equal. And some people might like this project that you think is absolute crap, it's like a treasure to them. And the stuff that you think is a treasure, other people just absolutely hate. And I just happened to fall into that line with The Last Jedi. You and I discussed it, and that's kind of what spurned this, what started this whole thing. And it's just been a lot of fun to go back to the roots of Star Wars schoolyard debates and still love Star Wars as a whole, even while we disagreed on the things in between.
Yes. Yeah. 100% agree. It's been great to have the schoolyard debate. And I have an extra privilege that I don't think you have, in that I actually get to look at our recordings to do the editing. Can you see my screen now? Okay. So what I'm showing to Matt right now is we're using a software to record our things, and there's like little thumbnails from all of our recordings for all of these episodes. And Matt, what do you notice on our faces on all of these thumbnails?
We're grinning like idiots.
This is joy. This is childhood joy. Like, I have no idea what moments these little thumbnails were captured on, right? Like, the software is just capturing it, but there is straight up smiles, there's joy, there's passion. Like, in one of them, like, my hands are up and your hands are up. Like, we are, like, this has been a real blast for me to have this discussion with you, go back to the schoolyard. And like you say, Star Wars is some of the most uplifting content in a world that, how do I say this? In a world that constantly wants to tear people down, in a world where algorithms like emphasize and prioritize the negativity, the tearing down, like in a world like that, to have something that says, no, it is good to stand up. It is good to have principles. It is good to have hope and optimism and try to build something that you believe in. And that's what Star Wars means a lot of things to a lot of people. And those are themes of Star Wars, right? Like, I am a Jedi before, like my father before me. You know, I can stand up to the tyranny, to bullies. I can do it in a nonviolent way, whatever it is. Like in a world of darkness and tearing down that we live in, content like Star Wars is good for the soul. Now, I know a lot of people are like, it's just a film. It's just a stupid thing. Like, like those people, okay, fine. Like, humans are a story-based creature. We love stories. We learn from stories. We engage in stories. We communicate with stories. We think in stories. And a story as powerful as Star Wars, the light and the pureness, everything that you said you love about Luke Skywalker, we need stories like that because they teach us how we are supposed to live our lives. That family and friends are the center of everything. That we're not just orphaned farm boys. Within each of us is a Jedi. Within each of us is a Princess Leia. Within each of us is something that can grow and communicate and contribute positively to the galaxy that's around us. No matter the darkness or the tyranny or the bullies that are in front of us, we can all rise up and connect with that ray of light within us and lift the whole galaxy that's around us. And I think Star Wars does that in an amazing and powerful way.
Absolutely. And to that point, being inspired, and this movie actually... It's funny that we're at the end of this episode and the end of this movie actually plays on that exact thing where you have a crowd of kids who now have an updated legend of Luke Skywalker. Like, they're not playing the old legends. They're playing the legend of Luke Skywalker that they just heard about on Crait and the hope that he brought. And then you have the shot of the kid probably going to be a prospective Jedi, just like gazing off into the galaxy, just knowing that there is positivity, that the individual can have an impact if they join the fray to fight against the darkness.
Because you are listening to Last Jedi, The Final Debate, I already know something about you. You care about stories that matter. Stories of courage, corruption, friendship, sacrifice, and the battle between light and darkness. So I want to invite you to my other show, The Lore of the Rings. It's a podcast exploring the world, wisdom, and wonder
of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, which I think is the greatest fantasy story ever told. If you love deep dives and epic conversations, come wander Middle-earth with me. Visit ringspodcast.com and start your adventure.